Chapter 3. Self-Help. It was late in the afternoon before the four children were able to talk calmly over their position. Henry had not forgotten the packet or book committed to his care, but for the rest they had thought of nothing. Clearly the first thing was to get something to eat. But how? "We must go to the village," said Henry after a pause. "They may have food there to give us and shelter, for it is too late now to do anything till tomorrow." "Oh, yes, let us go to the village," said Marie, almost eagerly. "I had forgotten the people there. This place is all so strange." So they went downstairs into the kitchen, and out by the side door, fearful of again passing by that other way. This brought them out on the other side of the castle, and in order to reach the bridge they had to pass round the wall. As they turned the corner, a fresh cry of grief and surprise broke from them on seeing the ruined state of the little valley. The mill wheel had stopped, and there was still no sound except the running of the water. Four out of the five cottages lay in one heap of smoking ruins. The fifth, which stood a little apart, showed no sign of life. After that first cry, they proceeded silently, and they had gone through sights already, which made them feel just then as if nothing else could matter. It was only what they expected, to find the same desolation and disorder in the one remaining cottage as in the castle. Not quite so great indeed, for the scanty furniture remained, though it was thrown about in every direction, and in the cupboard Mary found a jug of milk and half a loaf of bread. Evidently the soldiers had not thought it worth while to look there. All the inhabitants were gone. Probably they had taken refuge in the mountains until the soldiers were gone. "Don't you think we might have this?" asked Marie, as she took out the bread and milk and put it on the bare wooden table. "Yes," said Henry decidedly, "if they come back, we will pay them for it, and tonight we will sleep here." "There is only one bed," said Mary doubtfully. "Guillaumine and I will stay in this room. It is quite warm enough to sleep on the ground." Marie was busy cutting slices from the loaf and pouring some of the milk into a mug. The children tasted it languidly at first, but their hunger at last made itself felt, and the two boys, at any rate, ate almost ravenously. "We had better save a little for the morning," said Marie at length, "in case we should not be able to get anything more." Henry stopped in the act of pouring out fresh milk from the jug and rose to put it back again. It was now about 6 o'clock, but they felt as if weeks had passed since they watched for the sunlight in the morning. They sat about in silence for a little while, feeling too sad and listless to do anything. At last Marie roused herself. "We had better go to bed early tonight," she said. "Come, Louis, you are nearly asleep now. Don't you want to get your things off and feel nice and comfortable again?" "You can't undress me," said Louis, opening his eyes wide. "Oh, yes, I think I can," said Marie, too sad to smile at this speech. "And you ought to be washed, too. There is no hot water, but such a lovely hot day, you'll like cold, shan't you? That wooden tub, Henry, could you and Guillaumine get me some water in it? There is an old bucket lying outside." The two boys rose at once, glad to have something found for them to do. Louis did not at first like the idea of being washed in a wooden tub, but he at last agreed, and then became quite amused at all the new things that he and Marie were trying to do. Marie found a clean, though coarse, child's nightdress in a box belonging to the bedroom, and persuaded Louis to wear it. He had just risen from saying his prayers at her knee, when the two boys whom Marie had asked to look for wood to light a fire with in the morning returned. "Why, Louis, how nice and clean you look," said Henry, laying down a bundle of sticks on the hearth. "Doesn't he?" said Marie eagerly. "I have done everything except brush his hair out, but I can't find anything to do that with." "They did not take our brushes and combs up there anyway," said Guillaumine, pulling one out of his pocket, "and I brought mine, as you said we might stay here tonight." Louis was soon in bed and fell asleep almost directly. Meanwhile, Henry and Guillemin went down to wash at the stream, and then filled the tub with fresh water for Marie in the morning. Marie went out into the yard behind. There was a little heap of straw there, and she meant to bring some into the outer room for the boys to lie on. Her foot struck against something in the straw, and stooping down she found a hen with its head cut off, and two eggs lying close by. She called Henry to look at it. "Do you think it would be good to eat?" she asked, shrinking a little as Henry took it up. "Yes, I do not think it has been dead long," said Henry. "Perhaps the soldiers killed it yesterday. Only how shall we cook it?" "I don't know how, but I will try tomorrow," said Marie bravely. "I am sure all the feathers ought to come off. We will pull them off, you and I, when Guillemin's bed is made." Accordingly, when Guillemin had fallen asleep on his straw couch in the kitchen, and the sun was getting low, Henry and Marie sat down on a log of wood by the door to pluck the hen. For the first time, too, they began to talk of what they must do on the morrow. "You have the packet safe, have you not?" said Marie. "Perhaps there is something in that to tell us." Henry took the packet out of its hiding place in his breast and opened it with reverent fingers. "All different papers," he said, when the outer covering was taken off, "except this one packet which feels like money. Let us see what we can make out of them." Some of the papers the children were too young to understand the value of. They were certificates of marriage and of the birth of each child. There was a paper containing a list of title deeds, and a note added in their father's hand to say where they had been concealed. There was a letter into an English name in Hampshire, and which puzzled them as much as all the rest, one to a French name in Amsterdam, and lastly, there was a hurried note in their father's hand written on the back, "For my eldest son, after I am dead." Henry broke down as he finished reading this, and Marie also was quietly weeping. "What shall I do with it?" he said in a faltering tone. "It was meant for Aurella." You are the eldest son now," answered Marie between her sobs. "Read, Henry. It will tell us what Papa meant us to do." It was very short and had been written in haste that they could hardly read it. "If we should be taken from you on our way, make your way to the coast, and go as secretly as you can to Amsterdam, not to England, as I had meant. You will find money enclosed, and a letter to a lady there, who will receive you for our sake. Love each other, and whatever happens, be in the true faith which we have taught you, and may the good God bless and keep you, my children, until we meet again. Your loving father and mother, Louis and Marie de St. Croix." Marie's busy fingers did not cease from her work, but her tears were falling fast upon the dead bird. Henry refolded the paper in silence. They counted the money in the paper and found that there were 17 gold pieces, each worth 25 francs and 5 francs in silver. 430 francs, said Marie. Oh, Henry, how much money! I dare say we shall not find it more than enough, said Henry. And indeed he spoke truth, for on the very day on which they reached St. Louis de Lenard, Monsieur de St. Croix had intended to enclose notes to the value of some 1,000 pounds. It will take us a long time to get to the sea, and we must keep enough to pay for being taken over. I hope we shall not be robbed, said Marie in an awestruck voice. We will not let anyone know how much we have, said Henry. See, Marie, you shall take these 5 francs to spend, and when they are gone I will give you more, and then you can always say that you have not got any more. Marie drew out her silk purse, which contained about 3 francs still of her last monthly allowance, and put the money into it. Ah, said Henry, when he saw the purse, I have nearly 5 francs left in my purse, and I think Guillemin has some, Marie, if you consider. I am afraid this money must be very little. You and I have had 10 francs a month, and Guillemin 5. That makes 25. just as much as there is in one of these gold pieces, so that we have 17 months, pocket money, as one may say, but then, you know, we never bought anything to eat or to wear." "Ah, well, one can but do one's best," returned his sister, taking up her work again. "Oh, Henry, I don't believe this chicken will ever be done." "Oh, dear, how thoughtless of me. I have not been helping you," said her brother, beginning to pluck the feathers at such a rate that between them the bird was soon left bare. "There," said Marie, rising with a sigh of relief, "now it's all ready to cook tomorrow." "Are you sure?" asked Henry doubtfully. "Isn't there some part of the bird's inside that ought to be pulled out?" "How should I know?" asked Marie, a little proudly. "I am no serving maid." "Yes, but I think there is," persisted Henry. "I saw Lucien doing it once, and I think I can manage it. Give it to me, Marie. You cannot do it." "No, no, Henry," exclaimed Marie with a sudden recollection of her pride of birth. "You, de Saint Croix of Saint Croix, soil your hands with our dinner? It will do just as well without." "No, it won't. It will spoil it. We may have worse things to do than this," said Henry gloomily. "But," and his bright smile came back once again, "one is not the less noble and rather more de Saint Croix." Mary gave up the bird in silence, and he manfully accomplished his disagreeable task. Then the two brave children, upon whom the care of all was now to rest, said their prayers together, and laying themselves upon their rude couches, which were now a luxury, slept the sleep of God's beloved.